the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. Welcome to the MJA podcast. My special guest today is making his third or fourth appearance on this podcast. Dr. Sandro De Meo has been a rising star of the younger generation of public and global health clinicians over the past decade. He has worked for the World Health Organization and is the co-founder of global social movement NCD Free and Festival 21. He has been CEO of the EAT Foundation, has written a cookbook, and co-hosts the ABC television show Ask the Doctor. These days, Sandro is the CEO of Vic Health. He and his colleagues have put together a 7-chapter supplement for the MJA called Australia in 2030, What is Our Path to Health for All? The supplement and Sandro's editorial, which accompanies it, are free to access and are available at mja.com.au from the 3rd of May. Welcome back, Sandro. Why is now the time to act, particularly?
Well, I suppose it's both related to where we are now, but also where we need to get. We've committed as a planet to the Sustainable Development Goals, the United Nations Global Framework on Sustainable Development. Australia committed to health for all by 2030 through that, and addressing a number of other things relating to health, whether it's nutrition or gender equality or fair work. So to get there by 2030, we're already in 2021. We started in 2015 and we've gone backwards. So, you know, that's the first point is we have a long way to go. And if we're going to really make significant inroads on achieving health for all and our commitments to the SDGs, but just our commitments to even things like fundamental human rights, that everyone deserves a healthy and respectful life and the best possible life that we can provide to all of our fellow Australians, we need to get moving. And the second, I suppose, is where we are now. It's that, you know, we're coming out of 2020, 2021. The pandemic will probably continue to evolve and cause some challenges, some significant challenges for Australia for a number of years and for the planet. But generally, we have done quite well. We have avoided major catastrophe. And so there's the opportunity to rethink the trajectory of our health system, of health more broadly, and of society even more broadly than that, but also to build off some of the insights that we gained from 2020. For the first time, we're able to really move quickly and profoundly when it comes to progressive federal and state policies around housing, jobs and job security, welfare, and what is a respectable welfare income, how we treat each other, how we behave as a society, all of these things, we really, I think, took some bold and important actions and strides forward on in 2020. But it also showed how fragile our system currently is, that these things we've called the social determinants of health for many years that were really not getting the political attention and traction at the federal level that they deserve, suddenly became unavoidable. Because if people didn't have access to an income and a stable job and sick leave if they needed it, if they didn't have a stable and high-quality roof over their heads, or they were facing the threat of losing their house, if they weren't able to get access to healthcare through a digital means that, you know, meant that regional Victorians and Victorians who are not maybe living near major tertiary centres were able to get better access potentially than even before. We suddenly were spending more time in our local neighbourhoods and reconnecting in some ways with our local environments. And we were able to turn work on its head. We were able to say, you know what, you don't need to commute 2 hours each day to be able to do your job effectively. That actually working from home a few days a week or part of the week or for some jobs most of the week is actually even more efficient and allows people then a bit more time with their kids, a bit more time to be physically active, a bit more time to cook at home and cook from scratch. All of the things that we saw people doing more of some populations doing more of in 2020. So it's the opportunity of what was fundamentally a big shake to the system. It's kind of the equivalent of we took the snow globe and we gave it a big shake, and some things fell in a way that became incredibly dangerous and caused greater inequity. Some things fell, silver linings, in a way that actually we want to retain and hold on to those things. But we're also able to put things in place to protect populations and to really think about health equity in a bolder way than we had been previously. And so how do we hold on to some of those things? How do we hold on to the insights and learnings? And how do we ensure that now with 9 years to go to achieve sustainable development on the only planet we will ever have as a population? And realizing also that, you know, the fundamental, we've talked about things like the SDGs, the fundamental kind of vision of the SDGs is leave no one behind, which I find really powerful. Yeah. Some people don't like it, but I find it really powerful. And for me, it's a really important compass, actually, for my own career and what drives me and what I do. But, you know, what has emerged as a narrative over the pandemic is no one's safe until everyone's safe. And I think that's so critical because it is so profoundly true. And whether it's our state, whether it's our family, whether it's our community, whether it's our country or whether it's the planet, when it comes to climate change, when it comes to the digital revolution, when it comes to financial and economic equality, when it comes to even things like Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander rights, none of us will be safe until everyone is safe, including those who continue to face unacceptable and immense barriers to achieving and maintaining good health. And so now is the time to continue to keep that as our moral compass, to continue to have that as our vision as we recover and as we build back better and fairer and more equitably and more healthily for Australia, and as we gaze then to 2030 and achieving that important goal of health for all.
You mentioned earlier that you think we've gone backwards in some ways since 2015. In what ways do you think?
Well, I mean, I don't want to be too pessimistic, Kate, but you name it, and we've gone backwards, really. I mean, climate change, land conversion, loss of ecosystem services, ocean depletion, CO2 levels in the atmosphere, even things like hunger, which for decades were going down and now going back up. And that's largely because of climate change and conflict, which is also to a large degree driven by climate change and changes in things like our food systems and geopolitics relating to that. Here in Australia, income inequality, access to a lot of the basic services, obesity, child obesity, even food insecurity, in so many aspects of what I would say are kind of the really fundamental opportunities and precursors for a healthy life that we should be able to afford every Australian. Every person living in Australia, let alone our global responsibilities, in many domains we've gone backwards. Now, in some we have gone forwards, but in so many we've gone backwards. And I think the other thing that you have to reflect on is that when we started, when the pandemic began, there were some who felt optimistically and probably based on some good reasoning that it may be the great leveler, that everyone was going to be affected. We're all swimming in the same ocean. And therefore, we might see a leveling of inequality through the pandemic. Actually, what we've seen is, I call it the great accelerator. COVID has basically accelerated every trajectory that we were on before, whether it's the digitalization of our lifestyle and our lives, whether it's hunger, whether it's major climate challenges, or whether it's even, you know, some of the positive things like the digitalization of healthcare and the change in work. It's accelerated almost all of the trends that we were already on before. And that's a huge opportunity and a massive challenge, because some of those things are very good and some of those things are very, very challenging for the health of not just Australians and our current global population, but also intergenerationally future generations.
Do you think COVID has changed the public's attitude towards health policy and where we need to be heading?
I hope so. Optimistically, I say, yes, it has. There are a few things that tell me that that's the case. The first is just the immense interest and focus on health and public health. And I don't mean the fact that when I used to tell people I had a PhD in epidemiology, people were like, oh, bugs, that's awesome. Whereas now in 2021, it seems everyone is an epidemiologist. what I really mean is the incredible focus and interest on health has to be a positive thing. People get it. People get why public health is important. Like, we haven't really connected with populations. As a public health expert, we haven't been able to really communicate the value of public health, the value of something that fundamentally is about avoiding. So if we're doing our jobs right, people will never see anything happen. That's the wheelhouse of public health. And that comes with a big challenge, because over time, people forget why we have public health, the importance of public health, the importance of investment in the public health sector, but also the wider health sector, in prevention, in keeping people healthy for longer, the realization that if we live in a society where the majority of people are facing chronic illness, chronic diseases like diabetes and heart disease, that fundamentally it leaves them at greater vulnerability to the major shocks that, you know, are going to come up at some point, whether it's climate change in the future or a global pandemic. So, you know, I think it's in other countries they've done even better. The UK, they've realized that, you know, they have to actually act significantly on obesity, because we saw a 50% increase in risk of death associated with individuals living with obesity if they did contract the virus. So there have been these connections in people's minds. I think a spotlight has been shone on public health, on the healthcare system, on prevention. I think it's been fabulous to see people really trusting our experts and scientists, really informing and guiding policy, which is so important. And then we've also seen it reflected in government. So, you know, at the end of the day, we vote for our governments. We live in a democracy. And where I come from in Victoria, we've seen record investments in social housing. We saw individuals facing homelessness, you know, being sheltered in record numbers and now looking at more long-term solutions. We saw record investments in food relief and really strengthening and consolidating the food relief sector, but going beyond just food relief to quality food, to, you know, how do we get affordable, nutritious food for all Australians? We saw, you know, we saw enormous investments even in, or discussions around and investments in people facing insecure work. The idea that we were providing sick leave for people on casual work, that we were, the system kind of really came together and people galvanized as a community. Yes, there were challenges and yes, it was very state by state. And, you know, people can say there were issues and there still are. But I think there are a lot of opportunities. And I think people, the general public, the fact that health is so front of mind, the fact that public health and prevention have really shown what they can do, that health experts have been trusted and entrusted by the public and by government in a way that we haven't seen in a long time, and that health leaders, you know, like the president of the AMA and Nick and others around the country, their voices were really sought out. And whether it's the public, politicians or others, it's a really important time for the medical community. And an opportunity, again, for the medical community to continue to lead and to continue to say, okay, we've learned so many lessons. It's now about looking forward. It's about retaining some of the important measures we put in place to protect the mental and physical health of Australians over COVID. It's about learning from our vulnerabilities that have become so crystal clear over the pandemic. And it's about building back a healthcare system, a prevention system, and a society that is stronger, healthier, more equitable, and ultimately has to be more sustainable.
I'm chatting today with Sandro De Mayo from Vic Health. His editorial and his team's MJA supplement are both free to access at mja.com.au. Sandro's editorial also can be found at Insight Plus, the MJA's weekly online news magazine. If you have anyone that you would like to see featured on this podcast, please drop me a line at cswannell, that's C, S for Sam, W-A-N-N-E-L-L at mja.com.au. All our past episodes can be found at mja.com.au/podcasts. Back to our chat. You talk in the editorial, and also the supplement also talks about interconnectedness. What do you mean by that?
Well, the supplement's split over 7 chapters, and it looks at things like the social determinants. It looks at, really importantly, looks at the concept and the importance of culture, and particularly Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander culture, and how that must be better respected and can be engaged to build stronger healthcare systems and collective wellbeing. It looks at physical spaces, our cities, and our living environments, and you know, looks at things like a 20-minute neighbourhood, but much more beyond that. It's as we move to an urbanised world, what does this mean? How do we make those healthy by default, and that opportunity to continue to strengthen public health? It looks at the Anthropocene, the age at which humans have become a dominating impact and force on the planet and what that means for health promotion. Mm-hmm. It looks at the commercial determinants and it looks at the digital determinants and finally sets a really strong vision for governance. But I think one of the really critical things is actually the connections across the different papers, because we live in a system. We live in a dynamic system. Just like our body is a constellation of really complex dynamic systems, the kidney, the heart, the liver, these are not straightforward. These are incredibly complex equilibria and systems. And the world is as well. It's the interconnection between things like digitalization of our world, which gives rise to greater opportunity for commercial determinants to influence our consumption, which through consumption and market failure and growing externalities drives climate change, which we know is a major driver of inequality, of conflict, of food insecurity, and of ill health, even through things like bushfires, which we know then influences our cities and how we build our cities and the safety and healthiness of those cities. So all of these things are actually so interconnected. So while we kind of broke the papers down to make them bite-sized in a way and allow us to have a level of focus, I think the strength and the importance of the supplement is actually in the interconnections between the different papers. And sitting back after particularly reading Chapter 7 around governance and setting a strong vision, a fairly bold and I would say ambitious vision by those authors for the future of Australia, and thinking, well, you know, how does my role as a clinician, how does my role as a community leader, which doctors and nurses and physios and allied health and AMBOs, by default, you are leaders in your community. People look to you when you speak, people listen, and when you act, people notice. And so how do you use your voice, your influence within that dynamic system in the clinical setting, but also beyond the clinical setting? What role does the medical community have in shaping not just health outcomes and a reduction of disease outcomes, but what role does it have in really shaping and challenging the deep determinants and drivers of public health and ill health? And understanding the interconnections that while you sit at one point in that system, just like, as I said, if you're a cardiologist, you sit at the point of the heart, but you know that your system, first of all, is so complex and dynamic, but it's also so interdependent on the kidney. It's so interdependent on all of the other systems, the respiratory system, all the other systems of the body. And it's the same in public health. You know, and we've seen that over the pandemic. Yeah. It was people's ability to get affordable, high-quality access of housing. It was stability of jobs. It was being able to actually work from home and retain work. It was all of these other factors that actually influenced the outcome of community cases of COVID. But actually, it was all of those social determinants. It was the digital determinants. It was the commercial determinants and the cultural determinants that influenced what is ultimately a health outcome. And I think it's the same for lots of diseases. Diabetes, it's exactly the same. Heart disease, it's exactly the same. It is those deep drivers. It is the structural, environmental, cultural, commercial, political inequities that drive many of the most common health challenges facing Australia. And it will be through addressing those, again, long-term, in a sustained way, in a unified voice as a community, as a medical community, and as a community of leaders through government and sustained policy action that we can achieve a better health for Australia and beyond.
Whenever we run articles in the MJA and Insight about climate change, for example, we always get kickback from doctors, not all doctors, some doctors who say, look, it's my job to treat the person in front of me. I'm going to treat them. I don't care if they're white, black, green, brindle, whatever. I don't care who they sleep with. I don't care what their life is like. I'm just going to treat them for what they present with. Don't bother me with this climate change stuff. Do you get frustrated with that? Do you hear that?
I think it was Virchow that said, doctors are the attorney of the poor. I think at the end of the day, our role as doctors go far beyond the clinical setting. We have a responsibility that comes with the opportunity and the incredible privilege that we have as doctors and as healthcare workers more broadly to not necessarily be public, open, full-time advocates against climate change, but we have to educate ourselves and understand that the single biggest health risk facing Australians is climate change. the single biggest health risk facing the planet is climate change. And it is deeply linked to global hunger. It is deeply linked to global obesity. It is deeply linked to lots of other major health challenges that populations face. But fundamentally, I mean, the biggest challenge of our century will be climate change, and it's a health challenge first and foremost. So I think as doctors, being able to at least be thought leaders to equip ourselves to have the conversation, climate change is a health challenge. And so being able to speak to the fundamentals, understand what's driving it, understand how it is affecting health already, because it is happening around us. It is not the future, it is today. And being able to have those conversations and use the privilege of being a doctor or being a healthcare worker to at least continue these, if not drive some of these really important conversations about the future health of Australia, I think that's a critical part of our job as doctors.
Going back to the interconnectedness thing, what external partnerships do you think we need to form?
Again, it comes back to taking a systems approach. And doctors are I always say this to doctors, because we're the education that you're given as a doctor and as a nurse and as a paramedic and as a physiotherapist and allied health, it's that systems approach, the interlink, the kind of multiple complex systems working with each other within then the world, which is a further complex system. So it is kind of the definition of kind of meta complex systems thinking. And that's really what it takes to overcome super wicked challenges like climate change and like obesity. It is going to be working with colleagues in the climate space. It's going to be working with food producers. It's going to be working with urban designers. It's going to be working much more closely with policymakers and politicians. We have to work in a more respectful way with Aboriginal elders and Aboriginal Australians, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Australians. For 60,000 years, they have understood the concept of planetary health, the connection to culture, understanding culture, and then, you know, handing over power to a point that we're able to really work in a more respectful and effective way as a community and as a community of healthcare leaders. It is about working across that system. It's about working with urban planners, with, you know, digital designers. It's about working with folks in the environment space. Really critically, it's about working closely with policy partners and also with politicians.
Yeah. Does the medical workforce need to change, need to evolve to meet these goals?
I think the medical workforce is evolving, to be honest, Kate. Mm. When I meet young medical graduates, they are some of the most insightful, globally connected, empathetic individuals and leaders who are conscious of their privilege, conscious of the power that they hold, and very conscious of the deep inequities that exist within and across Australia and beyond. I think that's probably deep inside, if not most, healthcare professionals. I think the interdependence and the humility that has come with realizing that we are not the answer, we are part of the healthcare system and the systems that create health and healthcare in Australia, understanding that everyone will have a role and that actually, just like in the last 100 years, the major gains in life expectancy across the world were not made by doctors. They were made by engineers, by economists, by agronomists, by agriculturalists. And probably in the next 100 years, we will also not be the ones that create the biggest gains in life expectancy. But we still have a really important role to play. And part of that is a leadership role, which I think very many doctors are really great at. Look at how they've stepped up and really led over COVID, provided a strong, clear voice of reason, of science, of ethics, of equity. And then I think lastly, it's about, it is about that issue of, you know, being humble, of realizing that we are one part of a system that creates health, not just the healthcare system, and multiple systems that create health and afford health to some, but exclude many still in Australia. How do we work with and learn from other sectors who are doing it better than us? How do we go into these challenges knowing that we will have to work with, and we want to work with, economists, lawyers, agronomists, environmental scientists, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander elders and communities across the country from all backgrounds in a really meaningful way to be able to get better health outcomes and unlock our potential as a community of health leaders and play the role that we can and should play in that.
You and I have had conversations over the best part of a decade now.
We have.
You were young and bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and you're still young and bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, but there's now a younger generation underneath you. How do you see the differences between your age group and the ones coming up under you?
Oh, I'm really excited. Every generation does it better. And I think, and I can say that because I'm not young. So, you know, there is a generation, there are multiple generations doing it much better, I think. I look at early healthcare graduate students, the caliber of individuals who are deeply passionate and living and working in all aspects of the public health system and of the systems that mm-hmm. influence public health. If I look at the next generation of healthcare leaders, and as I say, I mean, I'm really lucky, Kate. I get not only to speak to you probably every 2 years on something real that I'm really passionate about and we're both really passionate about, but also for me, you know, engaging with students, it does give me such a sense of hope and optimism. And the way that young people have been clearly hardest hit by the pandemic, certainly indirectly, all of the mm-hmm. evidence supports that. And yet young people are always at the front, always with the loudest voice, calling for change on climate change, calling for greater focus on health equity. And a big shout out to the medical students of Australia, and I'm sure it's the same across all healthcare student groups, but to have, you know, over 1,000 medical students make their way to a conference every year to talk about health globally and to think beyond themselves about the bigger picture and how we as leaders in the health system can influence the systems that change and shape health for people across the planet and here in Australia. Over 1,000 young people every year, and that conference gets sold out multifold and organized by young people. Yeah. I just think that's such a one of so many examples similar to that, where young people are coming together, they're interconnected, they're passionate, they're intelligent, they're empathetic, and they're organized. And I think they're the ones that are going to get us mm-hmm. to where we need to be by 2030. And our role is to give them the power and the access and the opportunity and the support the resources. Yeah, exactly. And that's a big focus of our work and our future work at VicHealth is really engaging with young people in a much more meaningful way, giving them, handing over not just a seat at the table, not just a voice around the table, but handing over power and allowing them to really unlock their potential, giving them resources, the support to be able to drive real change, as your generation and my generation and our parents' generations did in lots of other important aspects of society. But these are high stakes. Yeah. These are high stakes issues. And I really think young people, we can't put all the responsibility on their shoulders. They're inheriting a deeply problematic world. But I feel optimistic, when I spend time with the next generation of health leaders.
All right, my friend. Take it easy and thank you for your time.
Take care. Thanks, Kate. Speak soon.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.